You're listening to The Critical Thought, where we challenge our listeners to use critical thinking when examining the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Hi, I'm Daniel, and the purpose of this video is to talk to you about how to understand the stages of transition as a Jehovah's Witness. All right, let's talk baseball. Okay, not literally, but figuratively. Here's the point. I've understood in business that clients and prospects go through predictable stages before they make a decision. We call this the decision-making cycle. And what I've discovered is what's true is transferable. What's true in business is transferable to life. Take a look at this visual. Yeah, it's a diamond, and diamonds are a girl's best friend. On first base is awareness. Second base is analysis. Third base is apprehension. And then you score the runner, because there's no place like home. Now let's relate that to us as Jehovah's Witnesses. First of all, you become aware. In fact, let me back up. Let me give you an example. You're watching TV, and it's Apple. They got a new iPhone. It's coming out. You become aware on first base. Then you go to second base. You do an analysis. Let's see. Do I want to go with the iPhone technology, or maybe I want to go over to an Android? You then go to third base, apprehension. Can I afford it? Do I really need it? Do I really feel like reprogramming my phone? Can you relate? That same decision-making process that has predictable stages is the same process you're going through right now as it relates to the Jehovah's Witnesses. Think about it. First base, you become aware that there's an issue. Maybe it's 1914, maybe it was 1975, maybe it was blood, maybe it's, you pick the issue, but you become aware and you have an aha moment.
You know, Daniel makes a great point about the transition process. And each person will go through this transition process. Lady C and myself, we've often discussed the steps that we went through in this process. As I said, it is truly a transition process. The first thing that Daniel mentioned was base one. First base is what's referred to as awareness. And I guess when we look back at ourselves, there were certain things that we simply became aware of. I think a lot of it also is the accumulative effect. And then basically what happens for so many people that we've talked to, we've met, they simply get that one straw that breaks the camel's back. And at that point, the floodgates open up and the races is on. If you had to say for us when we were in the organization, what do you think was the awareness point for us, or as Daniel says, the aha moment for us?
Well, I remember walking out of our bedroom one day, and you had the magazine in your hand with the 1914 teaching.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember you stopping me and saying, something ain't right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really didn't affect me at the time because I really wasn't thinking a lot about it because, you know, I went to the meetings and did my lesson and I wasn't all in it like that, you know, where the 1914 is changing. Because I remember this one couple in our congregation. Mm-hmm. And every time there was some new light going on,
oh, yeah,
we would be comparing notes and we would be saying, see, the society said this, they don't make this change, and we got to get in line. And we were always saying what the friends need to be doing. But this couple, they were really bad. I mean, they were like on people all the time about not, you know, being on the school, not being out in field service. Oh, yeah. So they were like those people that just terrorized different people in the congregation. Yeah. And I don't know, but I was all the, I didn't terrorize anybody about going out in service and stuff like that. But listening to them and not really paying attention to these changes that were being made, because they were looking forward to those changes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They liked when the society made changes. Oh, yeah. So when you brought that to me, you know, you woke me up and you helped me to start thinking about it. And then we continued talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you wouldn't have said anything, I don't know what I would have done on my own.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it's for, I think, for most people, because we are not really allowed to discuss things. Even in families, if a family was having a family study, the likelihood of anybody in the family saying, no, this doesn't make any sense. If they were to say that, it would be corrected.
True.
The daddy or the mom who studied with the kids or whatever, someone would correct, someone would check someone, bring them back in
right.
line.
That's true.
And so I look back at really what I think it was really like three major teachings. The sheep and the goat, which came out a month or so before the 1914 change. So it was just this accumulative effect of one thing after another. And that's one of the reasons why we tell people all the time that you really won't be able for most witnesses to give them one article. And that article now is going to result in them just leaving the organization. It will simply be an accumulative effect of them looking at things, questioning things, wondering about things. And as they say, certain things become like the straw that broke the camel's back.
True.
Yeah.
And see, the thing is, because JT and I talked all the time. Mm-hmm. And when we saw things happening in the congregation, we talked about it. We examined it like that. But I really feel like because we had that relationship with each other, where when the Watchtower came out with different things, we could freely discuss it.
Yeah.
And neither one of us was like, if you say that one more time, I'm taking you to the brothers and stuff. But, you know, we were still going out in field service. Yeah. We were still regular around our meetings.
We were doing everything.
And
we were being good little Jehovah's Witnesses doing what we were told.
Right.
But at the same time, we would often discuss things which would basically be considered off the record. Because you knew that you couldn't have those discussions. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge that people in the organization face. You cannot have an open, honest discussion about things in the magazine. Everybody has a falling line, total line, and we've had many study articles over the years where the society will tell you if someone is talking negatively, and the question is, what constitutes negatively? Mm-hmm. Well, typically it is when you are critically examining something that they wrote, something they changed, that's what constitutes negative. And so people eventually learn, just shut up, get shut down, be quiet, go sit in the corner. And as a result, that is why so many witnesses, and when we have actually done this in talking to people over the years, we will often ask people, were there anything that just stood out in your mind? And people always say yes. And then you ask the follow-up question, what happened to those things? And you get basically the same answer every time. I simply pushed it to the back of my mind. And that's what the society wants you to do. Don't put it on the table. Push it over in the corner. Because they know what will happen if you keep talking about it, wondering over it, and looking at it every time.
But I also remember you talking about that brother that was in your congregation with the alternative service.
Yeah.
And so you were telling me about how, you know, he could not take the alternative service job. So then I think the other article that we read was when the brothers, when Watchtower came up with the alternative service, telling the brothers that the reason why they didn't take the job was because their own conscience was too strict.
Yeah.
And that's when you just hit the ceiling.
Yeah,
because you couldn't believe it.
Yeah, because I knew the actual story behind it because I had a mentor who went to prison, so I knew. So for us, the awareness came when they changed the sheep and the goat teaching, they changed the Generation 1914 teaching, and they changed the alternative service.
Then you go to second base. Analysis. You start to do some research. Should I stay? Should I go? If I go, where do I go? If I stay, how do I stay low? Can you relate?
You know, the second point that Daniel made in reference to the transition process is how you will move from being aware that something is wrong to actually doing your own analysis. And that's what we did as well. And that's what you will do and others will have followed this path as well. Just looking back on ourselves and things that we did, you know, we did quite a variety of things as part of our analysis. And Lady C is going to share some examples of things that we did and things that she did and helping us to analyze where we were in terms of this religion in itself.
Well, I just remember, this is in the early 90s when we got our first computer. And, I mean, no YouTube was available, no Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So we were, you know, totally at the mercy of a bulletin board. and one of the bulletin boards was H2O, and then the other one was JehovahsWitness.net. And so we're coming along the time with Randy Waters and freeminds.org. So we really frequented that site. And I gravitated to all the women's issues because I call myself a woman of the 90s, and I'm not going to be, you know, held down anymore, you know. So basically, I'm out here doing all this research, and we're on the internet, and JT, he's on there on the bulletin boards. Now, he's up there more than I am because I was self-employed at the time, and I was really getting into my work and really enjoying the freedom of knowing that I don't have to feel guilty because I'm not going out in service all the time or going to all my meetings or just feeling confined to the religious teachings. But one of the things I will say is when we started doing our analysis and we started to think about what we're being taught and mm-hmm. we're doing our research, I would start looking around the Kingdom Hall at different people. And I would say, oh, Sister So-and-so, she hasn't been to the meetings. Well, I wonder if she's on the internet too. I wonder if she's reading the same stuff we're reading. Mm-hmm. And so I would go as far as I could get to the person without them turning me in. And so I said something to the sister about something I was reading on the internet. And she said, pardon me? Excuse me? And I was like, I was trying to backtrack so I could say, oh, wait a minute. I don't think she's there, you know? And, you know, I was on the internet. And there was, I think this one website was called Sean's Page or Somebody's Story. And she had compiled all these Watchtower articles and different teachings that had changed. Yeah. And so I'm talking to this sister on the telephone and telling her all about it. And so she said, oh, you could trust me. She goes, oh, yeah, I'm fine. She said, I have my own mind. I don't listen to everything that they say. She was just trying to reassure me that when I told her that, you know, what I was going to tell her what to go look at, she wasn't going to be judging me. And so she ended up, I sent her the link to the website. And I don't even know how long it was. It was less than a week. I do know that. Mm-hmm. And basically she told me that I was no longer welcome in her home. Because, you know, she realized that, you know, we were apostates and that person's site that we sent her to wasn't something that she would be interested in seeing. So it was really interesting how, you know, just the awakening and then researching and trying to think that you can talk to other people and share with them what you know.
Yeah.
And you're trying to tiptoe out of here without getting disfellowshipped. Yeah. So it was a lot.
Yeah, we, and of course, the analysis is just your basic digging, your basic research. Basically, for the first time in your life, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, you will feel a freedom of being able to read what you want to read and research what you want to research. And that becomes the most important thing that will happen to you on the second base. You're not going to be turning down anything that you can read because we've always made this statement, all of us have made it in some way, some shape, some form, that if it's the truth, it'll stand up. But after a while, as you begin to do the research, you begin to clearly see why the society don't want you asking questions, don't want you doing too much digging, because it simply will not stand up.
What really touched my heart during the analysis is when I read the experience about the young man that was getting disfellowshipped. And he just couldn't take it. And so his mother said that he went to the car and in the glove compartment, I think it was some ink or something, and he just swallowed it down and committed suicide. That stayed in my mind for so long. I just couldn't get that out of my head, the fact that this person had committed suicide. So when I'm reading all this stuff on the internet, you're reading other people's stories that don't live in your community. And, you know, when you look at that, sometimes I would think it sounded so far off. This can't be Jehovah's organization. But as we continue to delve into different topics on the internet, we began to see the same patterns. People were you know, in a kangaroo court getting disfellowship for something they shouldn't have been disfellowship for, not being shown mercy, and just all of that kind of stuff. And as you begin to read these experiences, I began to compare notes with what was going on in our congregation. And I was like, so all of the things that JT and I used to talk about that we saw in the organization was starting to add up. Because now we're reading and hearing about other people's experiences as well. And I can't, you know, say this enough. As an elder's wife, and your husband is telling you about the crazy stuff that's happening on the body of elders, this is the other stuff that's kind of sticking in my mind and thinking about how, you know, the brothers will be in there fighting all night long. Because, you know, you couldn't understand why are these brothers at elders meetings to 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning all to find out that they're in there fighting over crazy stuff. So when you're on the internet and you're analyzing all of these things, it all starts to add up.
Yeah, so true. So true indeed.
Then you go over to third base. You've got the truth in your hand. You know something ain't right, but you got apprehension on third base. If I leave, what will happen to my marriage? If I leave, what will happen to my friendships? And so oftentimes, like in real sport, the runners get stranded on third base or second base. You can't let that happen to you. The purpose of this video is to help you understand the transition stages.
And so with the third base that Daniel speaks about, that's really the final step. Because first you become aware that something is wrong. Then you begin to do your personal research, not let nobody tell you what you can read, what you can't read. You do your analysis. And then you realize, oh my goodness, this ain't the truth. And now you are now on third base. What are you going to do? And this is the most difficult part because, as Daniel mentioned, everybody has different situations and different circumstances. I know for us, when I think of it, I think about the problem you run into inside yourself. And for many people, it's about being afraid as to what to do. As they say, fear, false evidence appearing real. Because a lot of the things that you are afraid of when you're at that stage, when you're on the third base, when you leave, like now, we've been gone for years, you look back and you laugh, you're like, I can't believe that. I can't believe that we let these people run our lives like this. And that's what makes it kind of sad. But the point is, this is a phase that you will go through. Lady C and myself, we have talked to many people. They're at different phases. They're in family relationships where their partners at different phases. And it's very afraid. And I think probably the biggest fear is that once you realize there's something wrong and you do the analysis and you get your aha moment, you didn't realize that your entire social structure is about to change. And that becomes very difficult for a lot of people.
That's so true. And I remember, JT, when you were saying to me, mm-hmm. you said, if the end doesn't come by the year 2000, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, not that I wanted to stay. It was that I was meeting new friends and I really liked these people. And I was thinking to myself, now I got to go out here and meet all new friends all over again. And so your social structure is changing. Your support group is changing. And where, when you will be afraid as a Jehovah's Witness, I know with the blood issue coming up, you always had that support where people could be at the king, people from the Kingdom Hall could be there with you at the hospital. So I'm thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen if we got to go to the hospital? Nobody's going to be there to support us and all of that. And during the time that we had left, I got sick and I got put in the hospital and kept overnight for observation. And JT told me, put down my religion as a Jehovah's Witness. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to identify with this group anymore. And then he explained to me why. He said, put your name down because we're trying to fade. And he knew that the hospital liaison committee made their rounds at the hospital. So he did not want me to put my name down as not being affiliated with the religion, and then the brothers come into my room to harass me to find out why. And so I was like, oh my God, I wasn't even thinking about that. So he thinks while everybody else is sleeping, you know. Because well, I didn't think about none of that stuff.
A lot of it has to do with, unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it. And that is, with my background, you have a very good understanding of how the organization works. And this is what swallows so many Jehovah's Witnesses up, just swallows them up. They don't know how the game is played in the organization. They don't know what the rules are. And as a result, they walk into walls and get hit. I remember telling Lady C, telling someone in one of our forums about, you know, JT said he was going to leave if the end didn't come in the year 2000. And I remember some of the people's response. They gave the standard Jehovah's Witness response. See, you were serving Jehovah with a year in mind. Well, actually, and whenever I hear someone say that, I always just start smiling, because when they make that statement, that tells me personally, this is just a personal thing, that tells me personally they have no idea what the society has said on the matter. You see, people didn't leave the organization because they were serving God with a year. They left the organization because they realized the society didn't know what they were talking about. Understanding how the organization works, on third base, you will be afraid. I mean, that's the thing. You know that there's a chance you may lose your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, because they're going to know what to do. And I think that's probably the worst part about this organization. Everybody is prepared except you and I. No one prepares us. And that's what these videos that we do are all about. We want people to be prepared to understand these are the phases and these are the transitional stages that you're going through, so that you'll know you're not going crazy. What you're feeling, what you're thinking, that's normal. These are just the steps or the process of making the transition. And that's the way it was for us. We made a way. We wanted to get out of the organization, and we wanted to do it in a way where it caused less pain to us than necessary. And that's what we were able to do, fortunately.
Yeah, because when I think about it, we left in 1998, because once you find out this is not the truth, you can't keep going to those meetings. You can't keep sitting there listening to those lies. It's very, very difficult. And that's why my heart goes out to the PMOs, physically in, mentally out, because I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, you know, hang in there, do what you can. But when we found out that all that stuff was crazy, it was so hard going to that meeting. And then we knew that once we left, our character was going to be assassinated. And people dogged us, talked about us like a dog. And they would see us in the grocery store, on the subway, metro, just on the street. And they would look at us really strange, because we stopped going to the meetings, but we still looked like regular everyday people. We were happy. We were smiling when they saw us.
Yeah.
And it just didn't make any sense to them that we were the same people that were still going to the hall. Or we still look at the same people that used to go to the hall, but we just weren't going to the hall. And they just couldn't understand that.
Yeah, it didn't fit what they had been told. As I tell, we tell you all the time, the best revenge is success. You know, the way you live your life when you leave the organization, don't become a poster child. Live your life in a way that benefits you, your family, your loved ones who left with you. And for those who stay behind, we do what we can to help them. But at the end of the day, you have to take care of yourself first, because your mental sanity is on the line. We have heard and talked to so many people who have personally experienced the loss of someone in death because they took their life. They just could not take it anymore. And it's sad to think that if they had simply hung in there for a couple more years, they would have literally laughed at the fact that they sat in the back room with three guys who have no idea what they're doing, and yet they took their life because of the decision that these three men made about them, their character, their self-worth, and everything about who they are. We basically got, I tell people all the time, it's real simple. We got hoodwinked and bamboozled.
True.
And so go through and understand that these are the transitional phases that you will go through. You will have ups and downs. But once you pass through, you will, and you can talk to anybody who's left and understand everything that happened before. You will look back and you will shake your head like, I cannot believe I failed for that. And that's the way you'll feel. And you will feel good about yourself.
But you know what I think too, JT, mm-hmm. In talking to our audience is letting people know when we left, we didn't have these Facebook groups, these meetups and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's like so many people that have left the organization. And we literally had no one but each other. And I know I've talked to people and they told me, well, at least you had your husband when you left. I have nobody. But there are so many people out here. Yeah. Not only that, but in my earlier videos that I've done, you know, when I first started doing our YouTube channel, I talked about getting a new set of clientele. Or JT's mother used to always say, you got to get a new clientele of friends.
Yeah.
So we started saying that. So we, on our jobs, number one, because we knew we were leaving, it's interesting how we were getting ready to buy a house, and because of being self-employed, they don't give you all the money that you can qualify for. So I took a job. So when I took a job, I went on that job, and I zipped my mouth. I did not tell people that I was a Jehovah's Witness. And not only that, but I stopped telling people maybe a couple years before we left. I stopped walking around telling people that I was affiliated with Jehovah's Witnesses. So on my new job, I didn't talk about that. So I came in as Lady C or Kathy, and nobody knew me as being a Jehovah's Witness. We didn't want to discuss any of that with our new friends because we did not want to go into new friendships with people saying, oh, they're ex-witnesses. We wanted to go in as who we are and not be judged from a past affiliation with a group known as Jehovah's Witnesses. We went back to college. We moved to a new neighborhood. We just started living our life like we just moved to a new area.
You know? We live a normal life. Some that the Watchtower once made a statement, you can't live a normal life. Well, fortunately, you can.
Yeah.
Being a Jehovah's Witness is not a normal life where you will cut off your family and friends the minute an article tells you to. And this is why this transitional phases that you go through, all these different phases, you need to understand you will have good days and bad days, but you're not going crazy. You'll be just fine. And we have seen that. We have seen so many people leave, and once they leave and they understand what they were a part of, they're able to start getting their lives in place and moving forward. The organization wants you to fall on your face. They tell you, you are going to fall on your face. Well, you can decide if you want to fall on your face. We believe, no need to fall. Keep walking. Keep walking. As we always say, turn the lemons into lemonade.
So when Daniel talks about the third base and being apprehensive, for us, it wasn't a matter of where we're going to leave. It was when we're going to do it and how.
The bigger the decision, the slower the person goes through the decision-making cycle. Let's see, awareness, you run out of baby powder, deodorant, something silly. Aware, analysis, you're going to buy the Walgreens brand, the Duane Reade brand, or the generic brand. It's such a small decision, you have zero apprehension, you buy the item, you're out of the store. Make sense? But you're thinking about marrying someone, leaving a religion, leaving a job, sending your kids to a particular school. You go through the decision-making cycle, but you go through it more methodically, slower. If you can understand that you're going through these stages, then you can be proactive. You can then manage through these stages. You no longer think you're going crazy because you're stuck on a particular base. At least now you know where you are in the process. You could be on third base. Your wife could be on first base. And you now know that there isn't an alignment and you must calibrate or recalibrate. The coaching that I give my clients who are on third base is different than the coaching I give on second base or first base. So here are a set of questions you want to begin to ask yourself and your family. Question number one, where are we in the decision-making cycle? Right now, are we on first base? Just aware. Second base, doing some serious homework. Third base, we know the truth, but we're scared to go. Question number one, where are you in the decision-making cycle? Question number two is, how can you move forward in the decision-making cycle? That's what a lot of these videos have been about, helping move the runner, move your heart, move your family through the decision-making transition cycle. If you want to call it the transition cycle, give it a new name. Borrow these principles, but make them your own in terms of language. Okay, am I making sense? Question number one, where are you in the cycle? Question number two, how can you move you and your family forward in the cycle? Question number three, did you move forward in the decision-making cycle? If you know something is wrong, you gotta run those bases, because this is the game of life. And in this particular case, I'm coming to you as coach. Maybe you ran the red light or the yellow light from the get-go, or maybe the light is yellow. Proceed with caution. You need to take action. Don't confuse sincerity for accuracy, and don't play pretend. You got to change lights until they're all green. This is Daniel, or playfully I call myself Toasted Almond. And the purpose of this video is to try to be helpful to you and your family to understand the predictable stages that you will go through or are going through so you don't feel like you're going crazy. This is Daniel. Bye-bye.
We hope that you've enjoyed this video presentation. Please be sure to share it on your social media pages with your family and friends. This has been Lady C.
And this has been JT.
And we'll see you on the next video. Hey, this is Lady C. Thank you for tuning in to The Critical Thought. We appreciate having you in our audience. Not only that, but we invite you to subscribe to our channel and be sure to hit that bell so that you can receive notifications when we upload new content. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And give us a thumbs up if you like this video. Thank you for being in our audience.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.